Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver and Al Warren.
Heard on KCPQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Now we have Mr. Michael Hawley co-hosting today.
How you doing, Al?
I am always good, even when I'm bad.
That's right.
And so the world has to put up with me for one more year for sure.
That's right. It's great. Well, we're still here.
I'm glad everyone's happy. But, yeah, I've signed again with NBC, so I'll be doing another year with them. And we'll see from them. I'm just taking it a year at a time, you know. But we're having such a good time.
You know? Do they realize it's your co-host that's making you, or what?
No, I mean, you know, well, you know, it's your opportunity. You guys can all just turn into stars through this, you know.
That's right. That's right.
Disappear and then you're on. You guys can all be. Actually, everybody that's on the show is very talented, very good at what they do. I think each and every one of them could be doing their own thing. So you never know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
You'll be on Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, maybe not that.
Actually, I saw you did a pretty good dance when you had your daughter at that wedding and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've been known to do a few things here and there, but I usually keep it private. Just, you know, I don't want to show off my skills too much.
I was pretty impressed. I was, and only that's being a good dad. You're a good dad. So.
Thanks. Proud, well, we have six, so.
Yeah. And you're like, what, now 78?
No, I'm exactly the same age as you. And we are 61.
No, I'm not 61 yet.
Oh, that's right. I'm June, your elder.
June, you're the old man.
That's right.
It's catching up.
So I live in Buffalo, and I'm really close to Oakville, Ontario. And then that's where Hannah's from.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. There you go. You got a connection with the guest.
That's right. I always consider Toronto, Hamilton, and Buffalo kind of a tri-city area.
I agree. It's not far at all.
So, well, welcome to the show, Hannah.
Thank you.
Hannah Marie McKinnon. And we're going to be, you've got a new book called The Revenge List, which I'm sure that I'm on it. And it's glad to have you. So I didn't realize, so you're Canadian.
I am. I don't sound very Canadian, obviously. but I've lived in Canada for almost 13 years now. My husband's Canadian. We've been married for almost 24. But I'm originally from the UK, grew up in Switzerland, and then we moved here in 2010. So I am Hannah Mary McKinnon, collector of passports.
Well, why would you move to Canada? Why would you marry a Canadian?
Well, truth be told, we met in the dark ages of the internet in 99 by accident in a chat room. The first night I had the internet installed at my house, or I had the internet connected, I should say. And we married 5 months after meeting online, 10 weeks after meeting face to face. I was not pregnant. I often get that funny look. and he's the love of my life. So what can I say? So we moved to Canada when he moved to Switzerland, and 11 years and 3 kids later, he was a stay-at-home dad and I was working corporate, and we decided we needed a bit of a change. So we decided to come to Canada. And if I had not come to Canada, I don't think I would be writing. So there's that too.
Well, so you were prowling around on the internet first night in 1999 when things were so primitive. You were already she was already looking for a date.
Less of the prowling. The funny thing is, what happened was a friend of mine came over and he hooked me up to the internet. This was the era of dial-up modems, you know, when they made that screechy noise. And You could only be, you could be online or on the phone, but not both at the same time.
Yeah.
Those days. And so you get, it was bad. And he set it all up and he said, look, there's this chat site called ICQ. And I said, what is a chat site? And he said, well, it's people, you know, sad people like you who don't go out on a Friday night. And you could chat with people all over the world. And I thought this was extraordinary. How cool was that, that you could connect with people? And of course, ICQ at the time was, I guess, was it Windows-based or DOS? I don't know, whatever it was based, but there were no photographs. It was very rudimentary. And I ran a search in the 20s to 30s category, because I was 27 at the time, and up popped Rob's profile. It said 28-year-old Canadian living life to the fullest, because you never know when it might end. His username was Razor, so I sent him a message that said, hi, Razor, you sound pretty sharp. Groan. And that was it. That was, I met the love of my life that night, and there you go.
Wow.
Yeah. Totally unexpected.
Geez, you know, I used to go on the ICQ too, but I wasn't meeting Razor. I was meeting like Leather Daddy and stuff.
It's nice too.
It was kind of fun. It was kind of fun, but you just never. Yeah, it was so much more primitive than now. You know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Amazing. Completely.
Well, I'm Canadian too. You know.
Oh, are you? I didn't know.
Yeah.
That's why he was slamming on Canadians.
Yeah. I'm known as they're always telling me to go home in the U.S.
Oh.
They send me emails and tell me, you go back to Canada, you leftist, you know, leftist commie, you socialist.
Yeah. Oh, well, you'd be in good company if you were here then, so I guess.
So, revenge list. Now, so you've got the love of your life. You have no problem going on a computer and finding men. And,
then you,
well, just the one.
Well, you know, this is what you tell us. but now you're writing domestic thriller.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting into this revenge list. This sounds kind of mean. What is the revenge list?
So the revenge list is the story of a woman called Frankie whose anger management group therapy exercise goes horribly, horribly wrong. So she ends up in anger management therapy because of a situation that happens at work. She works for her dad in construction as a project manager, and he strongly suggests that she go to anger management group therapy. And she does, reluctantly. The first evening, she's tasked with writing a forgiveness list. So think of a list of people who have wronged you in the past and who you could work to forgive. Well, Frankie makes the list, but she doesn't really want to forgive anyone on it because they're all nasty people. So she thinks nothing of it when this list disappears in an Uber initially, until the people on that list, one by one, start having, let's call them accidents, or are they? So something has gone terribly awry with this list. And the big, big problem is that she put her own name on the list. Because her past self is the one person she will never be able to forgive. and now she's in trouble.
So she's got a hit list, and she's on it.
That's right. Well, it's supposed to be a forgiveness list, right? A private exercise, but then someone gets hold of it and decidedly goes a little bit more public with it.
So when did Hannah write this list, or Frankie write this list?
So I wrote the book last year, and it's quite funny. I was asked earlier today how I came up, with the idea. Normally I can pinpoint a news article or something I heard on the radio or something that, that sparks an idea. But with the revenge list, it was a little bit different because I had an idea for a book that I thought was really cool. And my agent thought it was really cool. And we sent a one paragraph, I think a two-page outline to my editor. And she said, I kind of like it, but I'm not sure it's high concept enough. And what else have you got? So I thought, well, okay, I've got something else in my back pocket. What about this one? And we did that three times. And each time my editor said, I don't know, not quite, that doesn't feel right. What else have you got? And she said with the last one, the ideas that they're good, but they just feel too quiet. And I remember sitting in my back garden thinking, too quiet? I'll give you too quiet. And then this angry character, just Frankie, just popped into my mind. And I thought, wow, what would you do if you had an anger management therapy exercise that just went horribly wrong? That you've got a bunch of angry people in the same room. So what would that look like? What could happen? How bad could that get? And that was it. I was off, and everybody agreed that they liked the idea, and here we are.
is your editor on that list? Or
no, she's lovely, and she was right. She was absolutely right. So yes, I didn't write it a year ago. I wrote it. When did I write it? 2 years ago. I started because I handed it in. Always hand it in a year before it publishes.
So you were COVID angry.
But would you believe I have had, now let me see, Sister Dear published in 2020. So that was my first pandemic release, but not written during the pandemic. Then there was You Will Remember Me that was written pre-pandemic, but published in 2021. Then there was Never Coming Home that I wrote. That was my pure pandemic book, written in 2020, published in 2022. So the revenge list is, this is another, it doesn't feel like a pandemic release though, because things have more or less gone back to normal, for which I'm very grateful. So I don't think there was any, maybe a little bit, but we come out of lockdown, so I think things were more or less getting back to normal slowly.
Right.
I'm not an angry person. I just enjoyed writing an angry character.
You weren't driving around with a big semi truck and flags on and all that stuff.
No, I was not. No.
I just want to make sure.
No, I get my frustrations out on the page. That's why I think murder mystery or crime writers are such lovely people, because we just get all of our grudges out on the page if we have any.
Do you find yourself creating characters or having characters in your books that are kind of derived from people you've run across in your life that maybe aren't so nice?
Generally not, no. I think in my first book, which was a rom-com, funnily enough, a romantic comedy, that one I pulled probably more from my, although it's Groundhog Day meets Sliding Doors, so there's a paranormal aspect, so obviously I didn't go through a Groundhog Day experience. But after that, my job is to, I feel very strongly that it's my job to make stuff up. So while I might pinch a thing here or there, a little detail, from somebody I know or something, or from myself or within my family, it would only be a detail. I would never pluck somebody from my life fully formed and drop them into my book. There's one exception to that, a little bit. So in Her Secret Son, I have a family lawyer, and I Googled family lawyers in upstate New York, plumped for one of them, sent filled in a contact form. And within about 10 minutes, I got a call back because I'd said that I'm an author and I was looking for 15 minutes of advice. And in return for naming one of the characters after whoever I spoke to. And one of the partners called me within about 10 minutes, no word of a lie. He called me back and he said, I see every contact form that comes in. And as soon as I saw yours, I said, stop touching that contact form. That one's mine. I want that one. And he called me and his name was Harlan Gingold, which is the most perfect name for this character. So, of course, the lawyer in the book is wonderful, which Mr. Gingold, the real Mr. Gingold was too. So I took a couple of his traits. But other than that, no, it's I love making stuff up. That's what I'm paid to do. That's my job. So I don't go around looking at people thinking, oh, I'm going to put you in my book.
Yeah. You know, someone doesn't cut you off in traffic and you put them in and kill them in your book.
No, definitely not. And no, definitely not. And hey, you know, maybe if they cut me off in traffic, they've got something more urgent to do than I do. So it happens.
Oh, you see, you're far too nice.
Well.
And so that's curious to be being far too nice and having dealing with anger like that. You must have had to get your rage out.
Well, it was a really interesting book to write, actually, to write from, and potentially contentious, because writing from an angry woman's point of view doesn't necessarily resonate with everyone. And funnily enough, I had a couple of comments. I saw people say that, oh, you know, she's really, the character's really angry. And I'm thinking, well, it says the revenge list on the front, so it's not going to be all happiness and cuddles. And it also says, oh, does it say, I'm wondering, oh, yes, on the back it says she finds herself at her very first anger management group session. So if someone's in anger management, they're probably going to be angry.
Well, yeah.
What was really important to me while I was writing the book was that Frankie has this forgiveness list, this list of people who she doesn't actually want to forgive. And there's a reason why the people are on this list. So I took a lot of time thinking about the circumstances, her past, and why she would write these names, so that the reader understands why she is the way she is and how she has become the way she is and why she makes potentially some not brilliant choices throughout the story. So when I have, oh gosh, I hate the term unlikable character, but if I have a character that's maybe not the best or behaves in the best way, for me, it's really important that the readers understand why, because I think you have a lot more leeway with readers when they know and understand the reason why the characters are doing things and saying things that they're doing and saying.
Well, I think that's important, and especially when someone is angry or they're doing bad things or they're thinking bad things, or it's important because quite often those characters believe in what they're doing is the right thing
yes.
to do. So you got to have people help them understand
yes.
why they think that or why they're in that place, because too often when it doesn't happen with a character, you just think they're insane because there's no detail. You don't know why they're driven.
Exactly. So, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think, so last year's book, Never Coming Home, is written from the bad guy's point of view. And you know right from the beginning, even said on the back of the book, the line on the back is missing wife, happy life. So that sets the tone of the book, which I actually floated as a joke and everybody at the publisher loved it and it ended up on the back of the book. And that, it sets the tone. It's supposed to be wry and funny, even though it's crime fiction. But it's a big ask for me to ask my readers, hey, come along for the ride. And come along with Lucas, who has hired a hitman on the dark web to kill his very rich but equally annoying wife. Equally so, it's a big ask to say to a reader, come along for the ride with Frankie on the revenge list. By the way, she's not angry throughout 360 pages. That would be exhausting for her, me and the reader. But there are bouts. It does flare up. So knowing that it's a big ask to have the reader come along with me and my characters on that journey, I need to give them detail as to why people are doing these things. So I hope that readers will understand them. They might not like them, but at least they understand them.
Right. And with Frankie, so that character, you know, screamed at you, and you kind of, obviously with that book, you with The Revenge List, you started with the character.
Yes. Yes. Yes, and, I think yeah. I did. Yeah. That's a character in the situation. Yes.
Right. Right. So how is it you typically find yourself writing? Is it character first, or is it situation or plot, or is it even setting? Because some people like to start with a place that they're in.
That's a great question. And I think it depends on the book. So for the last two, for The Revenge List and for Never Coming Home, it was more character. For Never Coming Home, I really, really wanted to write a book from the bad guy's point of view and see if I could turn the audience to liking him despite knowing they shouldn't. That was my aim. And a lot of feedback was, I like Lucas, I know I shouldn't, but I like him, and I almost wanted him to get away, or want him to get away with everything he's done and is doing. So that was really fun. And with Frankie, as I mentioned, the character really, and immediately thereafter, the situation. With some of my other books, it's been something I've heard on the radio, you know, and then trying to figure out how it could go horribly wrong. So it really, the neighbors, I'm just thinking of that one because of where I'm sitting, where I write has a bay window that overlooks the courtyard that we live on. And there are 9 houses on the circle. 2 went up for sale, quick succession. And I was looking out the window at the for sale signs thinking, oh, I wonder who's going to move in. And, oh, dear Lord, what if it was an ex-boyfriend? Now, how bad could that be? How awkward could that be? So that was the setting at that point. So it really varies from book to book.
Yeah. Yeah. We actually have the neighbor of your property on the line right now. No.
It's not an ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
Well, that's not what he said.
No. Oh, I knew I should have paid him more.
Yeah. You should have put him on the list.
Yes, I should have put him on the list. He might well be on the list now.
No, it's the whole thing is interesting. But what's your relationship with your character then? And I ask that because fiction writers of all seem to have the most unusual relationships developed with their characters. Like some will tell me they're like kids and they're like family and they're like whatever. And then some will say, well, I hear them, their voices in my head, or mm-hmm. they see them like in a movie and stuff. So what's your particular case with your characters?
I think Angry Hannah.
I think when I'm deep in the edits, about as deep as you can get when you're almost at the end, and this is before it goes to my editor for structurals and line edits and copy and proof and all that. So when I'm really still crafting the story and getting to know these characters and I'm almost at the end, honestly, if Frankie had walked into the room, I would have said, oh, hey, Frankie, how's it going? Cup of coffee? You know, it was that level of intimacy in a way, I guess, just that I knew who she was. I knew her backstory. I knew the outcome for her. I knew the future. So it was just, they become essentially part of me. And there have been occasions, I remember when I wrote Her Secret Son and the book was done. So it was completely done, copy, edits, proof, the whole lot. Everything was finished and over. I remember thinking, oh, I'm going to miss hanging out with Josh because he was such a good guy. You know, he was a nice guy. He was a kind guy. And in The Neighbours, I felt really bad for Nate, one of the main characters, because I put him through hell and back. And I felt guilty. I felt guilty that I made these things happen to him. So they become a large part of me, I guess. And yeah, I talk to them. I have conversations with them. Or I hear the characters having conversations with one another and I'm observing. So it's very, that makes me sound really odd, but I promise.
Yeah. Do they let you drive?
It's not that bad. You know,
well, I mean, you know, driving down the road, do they tell you to do things and you sort of end up?
No.
Yeah. Have you woken up in the middle of the night and there's like a shovel and muddy shoes by the bed?
Well, I hope to goodness not, but I do suffer is a big word. I do have parasomnia. So for those who don't know what parasomnia is, it basically means that you do really weird stuff while you're asleep and have no recollection of it in the morning. Absolutely none. And the way a sleep study doctor explained it to me, he sat me down and he said, okay, you have parasomnia. I said, what's that? And he said, okay, it basically you're like a whale. And I said, hang on a minute, that's a bit rude. He said, okay, like an albatross then, if that's any better. So you know how whales can, an albatross can swim and fly? They basically shut half of their brain off. One brain is, half of the brain is still swimming or flying in the case of the bird. And the other half is asleep. And he said, that's essentially what happens to you. And I have never played a round of golf in my life. Apart from mini golf, which doesn't really count, I think. But there was one night, apparently, allegedly, because I always wonder if they're just winding me up. But allegedly, I was out of bed, standing in the middle of the room in my pajamas with my eyes open. And this is the freaky part, with my eyes open, with an invisible golf club in my hand, having shouted four. And I was now looking for the golf ball. So it's very weird. And I have been known to do really some really weird stuff. Shouting and screaming. And that's also when things are getting really intense in my books, I think, that I'm now dreaming about the books to the extent, or working on the books in my sleep to the extent that I don't know, maybe I'm acting out scenes or something. I don't know, it's very weird. But shovels and you know, bin bags and stuff and duct tape, no. Mm. Thank goodness.
Can we have proof of life of your husband? Or...
He's fine, I promise. He's just making dinner, right. Actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I see. They, even though they met in the late 90s and they've been together ever since, that's because he's tied up in the basement.
There you go.
Wow. Now we're finding out real stuff.
So Hannah, I have a question about how about research? Do you go into a lot of research when you start writing something like this?
Yeah, so I do. Typically what I do with my process is that I might do a little bit, but not.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I don't do all too much research at the beginning because I'll disappear down rabbit holes, not knowing if anything that I'm researching is actually going to make it into the book or make the cut. So I'll write a really, really rubbish first draft and maybe do a little bit of research, but then have placeholders, you know, research amnesia for You Will Remember Me, for example. And for the revenge list specifically, I was asked today if I went to an anger management session just to have a look. And the answer is no, I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have invaded people's privacy just being there for research. But I did speak to a number of psychologists to make sure that I got the anger management therapy exercise scenes right. And interestingly, I also took a course with Sheridan College, that's here in the Greater Toronto Area, an online course, Criminal Minds, Psychopathic Minds. And there was a section about anger in that. And I found that so interesting because anger is an emotion that's generally perceived as hugely negative, but it isn't a valid emotion just like any other, like love or happiness or jealousy or take your pick. And through this course, it was really interesting the way that the teacher framed it. He said, you know, it's not anger in itself that's destructive. It's what you do with it, how you handle it. And that can be destructive towards others, property or yourself or all of the above. And I thought that was really, really interesting. And I tried to work that into the manuscript without giving anything away. There's a situation for Frankie where her anger is actually helpful, which one might not have expected as she's in anger management therapy. So that was really interesting. And taking the course, what was funny was I came up with the idea for the revenge list before I took the course. And I guess it was serendipitous. It just worked out that way.
Do you consciously think about how you write, let's say, violence and sex on the page in your book?
I do. So I think I had more sex in my first couple of books than I do now. And it's not that I'm averse to it. It's just that I'll put in whatever the story needs. And in the revenge list, I don't think, no, there isn't any, because it didn't call for it. There's maybe a hint of it in Never Coming Home, but the sex scenes weren't required. And in terms of violence, I don't write gore. You know, I don't particularly enjoy reading or watching gore. So I tend not to write it either. So there's some. I mean, Frankie gets into some sticky situations where there's a bit of violence, but it's never extreme or gory. So I'm quite basically I would write what I would like to read, the way I would like to read it. I think that's probably how I approach it.
It's always more fun doing it anyway.
Well, I'll pass on the violence part. Yeah.
The violence and gore are much more fun in real life than just writing it, you know. So what is the meaning when you put a book together? And I mean, obviously you come up with a character and all of a sudden there's the story and the setting and all that stuff. But at the end of the book, someone goes out and buys, let's say, the revenge list, mm-hmm. and they read it. And besides the entertainment part of it that you've done, is there something else you want people to understand or get or take away from that book?
You know, generally, I always say that I write to entertain. I don't typically think, oh, I want to address this issue through my book. I want people to learn this through my book. Although I guess with the revenge list, if people read it, they might think about their own anger, how they approach their own anger or hold grudges, for example. Is it healthy? Can I let stuff go? But there isn't always a meaning like that in my books. I mean, take Never Coming Home. You know, what was the meaning of that one? Do a better job hiring a hitman on the dark web to take out your enemy. No, I don't think so.
Well, that's pretty important.
In next year's book, I have a thriller that's about the rise and demise of an all-female pop rock group. I should say the rise and violent demise, because things don't go well. And I think that one's probably got the strongest undercurrent of a message in all of my books, which really is about fame and social media and how that affects us.
Right.
But I don't typically think, oh, you know, I'm going to educate people through my book about this.
But sometimes it comes organically, right?
Yes.
Like you're not sitting there consciously going, well, this is an important topic and I think this is important and we have to talk about this. But sometimes you're just writing a story and at the end of it, organically something's come out of it that's kind of wow.
And you
that
know,
really means something.
Sometimes it's also the readers that will say, oh, you know, I read your book and this is how it impacted me. Which I find so interesting, because everybody who picks up a book, whether it's mine or yours or anybody else's, they bring their own backstory to the pages and they will read it with their own experiences in mind, and it might resonate with them, it might not, they might have a really strong reaction to it, they might not, and it can be good or bad, or indifferent. So there's that to consider as well. I think sometimes it's readers in their reviews, you know, they'll say, oh, I read this book and this is how it affected me. And I'll think, oh, wow, gosh, that's so interesting. Cause that wasn't even top of mind when I wrote it, but I can see how that would work. Yeah.
Well, that's strange. That maybe works for you. The only thing I get on my books is they were reading it in some bathroom somewhere. And because that's the only place they put mine, shopping mall bathrooms. Well, actually, I do, because that's the only way I can get them distributed.
Oh, well, there's a lot of bathrooms in the world.
See, there you go.
You know, that was my marketing genius. And I've got like 6 number ones because of that. You know, I went to every bathroom in the country.
Yeah. True crapper book. That's right.
Yeah, true. Well, how does each book affect and change you, Bud? Now that's the key here, because now we can talk about how readers can spot things and sometimes get things out that you didn't even realize were in there. But what about you yourself? So each time you complete a book, like let's say we can go to the Revenge List, mm-hmm. you finished it, you get it in, and now it's come out. Where are you? Like what's changed about you?
With the Revenge List in particular,
Yeah, that's a good start.
That's a really good question. I'm not sure.
That's why I'm on NBC.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. How has that changed me? I think.
Well, you know, and it can go in different ways, because quite often, you know, when you see, because even for myself, and I know Michael knows this, when you go through the process of a book, there's, you know, there's the research part, then there's the painstaking trying to write the, you know, the dialogue and trying to get the story, you know, it's quite a process, just the whole thing.
Yes.
And not even the editorial part, but just when you're going through the process of putting it on to the paper, and you go through emotions while you're doing this.
Yes.
Not always happy.
Yes.
You know, and so when you go all through that, you also learn something. Each time you do a book, I find there's always something I take away from a book, where the next book is going to take advantage of what I've done in this book.
Yes.
So whatever you went through in the Revenge List usually sets you up so that the next book you do will actually be different because of the Revenge List.
Yes, that's true. I think what happened with this one, as I was brainstorming the plot and bouncing things around, I'm a heavy plotter anyway, but I went even more detailed and I was able to write the book quite quickly. And Never Coming Home was pretty quick too. The Revenge List was pretty quick. And I thought, okay, one was a fluke, two coincidence. Can I do that again? And I have. So I think with each book, I've learned to trust my instincts and my process and my writing that little bit more. And if I feel a scene isn't working, even though I've plotted it out and it's not working, whatever, I might just skip ahead, which is what I always advise people to skip ahead if you know what happens next, even if it's the end, who cares? It doesn't have to be written the same in the same linear fashion it's read. And from that perspective, from a technical perspective, that would be my answer. And then otherwise, I think in conjunction with the course that I took about criminal minds, psychopathic minds, I think it made me more empathetic, actually, towards people who might have, who are dealing with anger, might have anger issues. As I mentioned, if somebody cuts me off in traffic, well, you know, it could be their kid's really sick or they've just received a really devastating phone call that I know absolutely nothing about. So them cutting me off is probably not personal. It might be, well, it's not personal because I don't know who I am. So it's never personal. So I think it's probably the revenge list, funnily enough, writing about anger made me more empathetic toward it.
Right. I think that's important. I think in a sense that I think what happens to all of us as we write is we learn something about our own feelings mm-hmm. as we're putting stuff on, even if it's for other people. You sort of, you force your own mind to go through some of these things.
Yes.
And I think that brings out feelings that we might not have understood or realized we had.
Yes, agreed.
You know,
that's like when I plagiarize Al's books and he doesn't know about it yet. What happens, it makes me feel a lot. Oh, am I talking out loud?
Oh, there you go. You see, you know, I put him on the revenge list here.
There you go.
Don't make revenge lists, people. It's not helpful. Don't do it.
See, there's the meaning.
See, that's
you
it.
You got the subtext right there.
Don't I got to get to my class, my revenge class.
Yeah, your revenge class. He's giving them, you know. Well, what makes a good book for Hannah? Like when you're on the reading side of it, like what keeps you reading a book and sometimes even more than once?
Do you know what? I really like books, obviously, you know, the classic stuff that make me turn the pages and whatnot, for sure. I like books, especially in thrillers, that still have an element of humour. Could just be a few one-liners or whatever. That I really find enjoyable. I like quirky characters, you know. I like also reading from the bad person's perspective. I think that's really interesting.
So, have you ever, you know, with these books you've written, and maybe not any of these, but maybe there were some others that haven't come out, but have you ever been in the middle of a story or writing a story where all of a sudden, halfway through it, you just don't know where to go? You just can't finish it?
Typically not, because I plot so heavily. So when I plot, the first thing other than character and whose story is this, is the situation. Where are they? Who's the main character? Where are they physically, geographically, and mentally, really, at the beginning? And equally so, where are they at the end? So I'll have my two anchor points. I'll have my beginning, I'll have my end. Everything else is really fuzzy and has got to be mm-hmm. filled in. But I find it very difficult to even plot if I don't know or think I know, because things shift as I plot and I write, what is going to happen to these people at the end. So I might be writing a scene and think, oh, I'm just not feeling this scene. There's just something, it's not working. I don't know why. But I know what happens in the next chapter or the one after because I've plotted it out. So I'll go and write that. And then I'll either come and work on what's not working or change it altogether. But it'll still mesh in with probably mostly 90% or whatever. I might have to make a few adjustments to the other stuff I've written. But I plot beforehand. I don't plot on the page. I find it extraordinary. Authors who, Hank Philippi Ryan, a good friend of mine, she'll get up and she doesn't know what's going to happen in a book. And she's excited to find out what happens. And she has no idea. I couldn't write that way because I think I'd spend an awful lot of time just wandering around lost, like being in a forest without a map. I don't know where I'm going.
Do you have beta readers to help you out too?
Sometimes, it depends really on the deadline. But generally, yes, I might have somebody I had a couple of people read the revenge list pretty quickly, really, before it went to my editor because the timeline was short. But it's not mm-hmm. line edits. It's more of Alex or AF Brady. She's a psychologist. So she read the revenge list to make sure I hadn't messed stuff up, you know, too bad on that side. So it's not the detail. It's more of does this scene work? And she's been wonderful, actually. She's done that for a couple of my books now, and I really appreciate her insights and help.
Now, do you have social media presence? Are you big with interacting with fans and readers, and you're on TikTok dancing and all that stuff, and
no
website
doubt.
And all that, or are you not that way?
No, I'm on social media. So I'm on Twitter as Hannah M. McKinnon. I'm on Facebook and Instagram as Hannah Mary McKinnon, my website as well, of course, hannahmarymckinnon.com. And I also, speaking about Hank, we run First Chapter Fun. So First Chapter Fun is every Tuesday, 12:30 p.m. Eastern on Facebook and Instagram. And we read the first chapter of a different novel, not ours, only when they're released. So we'll be reading from the Revenge List really soon. It's a half an hour. So we introduce the author, the book. The author interacts with viewers in the comments, so they're not on live on camera. And we read the first chapter. And I started this in 2020 when the pandemic first, well, when lockdowns first hit Canada, actually, because I had a book coming out, and I was in a Facebook Messenger chat with about 14 other authors, and we're all freaking out, A, because of COVID, and then B, because we have books coming out and everything is shutting down. And I, more or less as a joke, really, said, well, to help promote, why don't I read the first chapter of your books live on Instagram and Facebook? So there was so much demand. I read 53 days in a row, consecutive weekends. That
wow. Like
every day. Because we were all at home, we were all in lockdown. Remember, 3 years ago, that's what it looked like. And then Hank asked me if I was going to continue, and I wasn't, because Sister Dear was coming out and I needed to write another book, and reading every day really was pretty intense. And she suggested that we share the workload and read twice a week, which we did for another almost 2 years. And then as of January, this January 2023, we dropped to once a week, every Tuesday. And tomorrow will be episode 334.
Wow.
There you go.
Yeah, so I'm definitely present on social media, but I have a TikTok account, but I don't use it, and you will never, ever catch me posting a dance video on TikTok of that.
Oh, come on.
Nope.
Come on.
Not
get
happening.
In there. Get with it.
Nope.
Come on.
You first.
I do it all the time. I have my dog. I walk my dog in the morning down the road, and we look at people's houses, and I post that on TikTok.
But do you dance?
No, because I'm walking. I can't walk and chew gum at the same time. Never mind dance. But the dog dances. How's that?
Oh, all right then. But I'm still not doing it.
No. Oh, well, do you interact with readers as in, like, you look at, let's say, reviews and things when people say things? Are you, do you take that to heart, or are you the writer that doesn't look at any of the reviews?
I used to read every review, every single one. And now I don't. I read reviews. I think if I'm having a, oh my gosh, nothing's working today, my writing sucks, and I'm never going to write anything good again, then I'll hop and have a look at some 5-star reads to bolster my confidence that yeah, you've been in this situation before when you say it's the worst thing you've ever written, and then 2 months later it's the best thing you've ever written. So get a grip, woman. But I don't go and read, you know, the 1 stars and 2 stars, because I write books and people read my work, and some people like it, some people don't, and some are indifferent. And when I read books, I'm the same. I don't like every book I read. I don't enjoy every movie or TV show I watch. I don't like every song I hear. Why would it be any different for my novels? Having said that, I don't really need to go and read about how people hate my stuff.
Right. Well, I always hunt them down myself.
Well, they might end up on my list, see? So,
yes.
You know, it's for their own protection, really.
Witness protection. Oh, that's just crazy. So what's next? Where are you going now? After the revenge list and that's all done. So what is Hannah going to be up to?
Well, I have a romantic comedy, a holiday romantic comedy publishing in September as Holly Cassidy. So not as Hannah Mary McKinnon, because that would be really confusing, because it's a very sweet, lighthearted rom-com set in Maple Falls, which is a fictional town in Colorado. It's a lovers, enemies to lovers. Should it actually be lovers to enemies? That might be fun. But it's an enemies to lovers story, just for the holidays, for Christmas. So that's September 26th, but as Holly Cassidy. And then I have my rise and violent demise of the all-female pop rock group story. Don't have a title yet for that one, but I suspect that will publish in the spring of 2024. That one's done. Line edits are done. I'm just working on a couple of behind the scenes things. And so now I'm working on my rom-com for 2024 and thinking about the plot for the thriller after the pop rock one. So never a dull moment.
Oh, no.
Sounds like it.
I'm sure the Spice Girls will be happy.
Actually, I mentioned the Spice Girls, funnily enough. I do mention them in the pop rock one.
That's the first group I think about when you say all female. And I should think there's others for sure, but that's just for some reason the Spice Girls come to my mind.
Yeah, I guess they're more pop than rock, but there's a brilliant band called The Beaches, from The Beaches in the Toronto area, and they're all female. You've got the Bangles, you know, from the 80s.
Yeah, oh yeah. And there's right. The Go-Go's, yeah, and there was tons of female bands and performers, but I just think of the Spice Girls for some reason.
Yeah, definitely. Well, they were the epitome of cool in the mid-90s.
Yeah, and that's my time, right? The 90s. It's all past now, so just doesn't matter. Really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you.
It's been a very good conversation, and we enjoyed having you, and hopefully you come back, maybe as Holly. So you picked Holly Cassidy, so why do you have two separate names for that? Like, is there a particular method to your badness there?
Yeah, there is, actually. So we wanted to have two distinct names, because otherwise, if people see this cutesy cover with two people on it and a dog in the background, and it's called The Christmas Wager, and they see Hannah Mary McKinnon and they pick it up because it says Hannah Mary McKinnon and nobody dies, that it might create a lot of confusion. So we thought we'd have a completely different name. And we chose Holly Cassidy. I was going to go for something HMM to keep the Hannah Mary McKinnon. But we decided that we'd have two names with the publisher. And we really liked Holly. And Cassidy came up as well. And if anyone sees my photograph, this is the logic behind it. Holly, because, well, it's very festive. It's very Christmassy. Cassidy actually means curly headed. And if anyone sees my profile picture, they'll know why. And HC is Happy Christmas. So it all tied in beautifully.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. It counterbalances. What was really funny, after I'd finished writing The Christmas Wager, and people fall in love and there's a happily ever after and all that, I was really ready to kill off some fictional people.
yeah, you can only take so much of that nice stuff.
The Hannah Mary comes out, yes.
Yeah, exactly, my alter ego. She's saying, okay, let's kill all of the people in the pop rock group or whatever. So, and actually, that one's probably my darkest, the pop rock group one. So no coincidence, probably.
Oh, well, that's good. I think that, I think it's a good idea. I'm considering that with my fiction stuff being a different name than my true crime. I just, and nonfiction, something that's been on my mind as I'm working through this right now. So anyway,
I think it's interesting to have it's challenging, of course, but I found that it gives me, especially when I write the darker stuff and darker characters, and then I switch to a rom-com, it's just, it makes me laugh, and it's fun, and it's happy, and then I can go back to writing crime. So it's turned out to be a really good balance. So I highly recommend it. Yeah.
My fiction and nonfiction are both death and destruction, so it's my name.
Yeah, he's just pure evil. So. Well, Hannah, so now, of course, we'll have your website up and your social media so people can find you.
Thank you.
And your book, The Revenge List. And it's been, oh, we didn't get your, do you still have ICQ?
No, I don't. No, because it still exists, and I found the love of my life, so I'm set, I'm good.
Well, yeah, no, I doubt that stuff's around, you know, it's all gone now. You know? Anyway, well, thank you. Our guest has been Hannah Marie McKinnon.
Nice speaking with you, Hannah.
Thank you both so much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.